Hola a todos y todas, bienvenidos a nuestro nuevo conversatorio de Buenas Noches Pirexia. El día de hoy tenemos a un tremendo invitado y para comenzar le damos, por supuesto, un gran aplauso y bienvenida a nuestro querido Matías Clown Salinas.
¿Cómo estamos? ¿Bien y tú?
Bien, bien, bien. ¿Motivado?
Sí, motivado, contento con el tremendo invitado que tenemos.
Sí.
Mr. Sheldon.
Sí, y no solamente el invitado, ya tenemos un sorteo tremendo. O sea, hoy día es un día maravilloso para la gente que nos ve.
Sí.
Oye, sin hacer esperar, bueno, comentarle a la gente que obviamente este conversatorio va a ser en inglés. Vamos a hablar Span English entre Matías, yo y Sheldon. Pero obviamente queremos presentar a Sheldon. Sheldon entiende muy poco de español, por lo cual realmente nuestra interacción va a ser mayormente en inglés. Si tienen preguntas, las pueden hacer en español. Nosotros las vamos a traducir al inglés. Así que, sin más, presentamos a nuestro querido Sheldon Menary. How are you, Sheldon?
Hey, gents. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for accepting the invitation.
Yeah, we are very honored to have you here. Most of the people that are watching know you, knows what you have done in Commander. And for us, it's a very huge, again, honor to have you here. So
thanks.
Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time.
Sure.
I know that
I know you guys love Commander, right?
Yeah.
So it's easy to say yes to come talk to people who have the same kind of love of the format that I do.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for accepting our invitation, as Matias told earlier. We are now talking about the plans for the RC to the 2022. But before that, I think most of the people want to know a little bit about yourself. If you can tell us, where did you start playing Commander? When did you start playing Commander? When did you start playing Magic? So we get to know you a little better.
I started playing Magic in the very beginning. I was at Gen Con in 1993 when the game got released to the public. And I knew that there was this company called Wizards of the Coast, but I knew them as a company that did tabletop RPG supplements, like system agnostic supplements for D&D and stuff. And there was a fuss over at their booth, so I went over to look, and they were demoing the game. I'm like, oh, cool. Card game looks kind of cool. And I bought a booster and a starter because they said, you know, you just need a starter deck to play. I'm like, all right. So I bought a booster and a starter, and I remember walking away from the table, opening the booster, and the first Magic card I ever looked at was Time Walk.
Nice.
And I said, I don't know the game, but I bet you this is a good card. So I started playing right at the beginning in 1993. I was living in Virginia at the time. I was in the Air Force, and I was stationed at the Pentagon. And I got an assignment to Belgium shortly thereafter, and moved there in 1994, and took the game with me, and got involved because I became a certified judge in 1996, I believe.
Oh.
And my first Pro Tour was in Mainz, Germany in 97. Then I spent 6 years in Belgium, six great years in Belgium. I sort of became a Pro Tour judge at that point, and moved to Alaska. And it was in 2002 in Alaska where my group of local friends, who were all gamers, showed me the sort of proto version of EDH. It was, there weren't many rules, and they just sort of had an agreement on how to play the game. And for them, even basic land was singleton. And if you remember, you know, if you were playing that long, the non-basic lands in 2002 weren't great, right? Yeah. You really had to struggle to put a land base together. So they showed me the format. I watched it play a couple of times. We had some plans about, like we made these kind of big plans on a league and reserving generals and expanding outside the five elder dragons to play, but I never actually played with the guys in Alaska. We talked about it a lot, but I left in early 2003 and went back to Virginia, and that's where I introduced it to my group of local gamers, and it's all they wanted to play. Like after the first couple of times, they're like, "Hey, can we do that dragon thing again?" And I knew that at that point, some things had to change to make it sort of a viable format. Like I said, the Alaska guys gave me this kind of seed of an idea, but then I took my experience in Magic formats and, you know, sort of Magic at the macro level, and changed a few things, like your general, as we called them back then, they had started with it shuffled into your deck. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if it matters, you know, you just gotta hope you draw it, you know. So moving it out of the deck and into, we used Exile for it at that point. I definitely made the basic lands not singleton, because I knew that nobody would want to play. Mm. It was too kludgy to play, yeah, to play that way. One or two other changes, and then when my local group really liked it, and for 2003, early part of 2004, we played it a lot. I finally wrote an article about it on Star City in August 2004, which was, you know, the sort of the birth of that. That's really what I think of the birth of the format is.
Okay.
Right. And I ran a contest, and then we played a big multiplayer game at the World Championships in San Francisco in September, like an 11-player free-for-all. That was kind of dumb. And, you know, and then we, you know, I infected the Pro Tour judges with it, and they became the primary evangelists for the format. Mm. And we would play it back, you know, at the end of the day of Pro Tour. It was a good wind down, right? We had been concentrating on high level Magic for 12 hours or more, and it became our beer and pretzels thing. And then one day, Scott Larrabee, who's the Pro Tour manager, and a very, very close friend of mine already, was like, "Hey, let's go get something to eat." And I'm like, "Oh, we're just sitting down to play some EDH. Why don't you play with us?" And I handed him a deck, and a couple minutes in, he's like, "Oh man, this is awesome." And he's the one that took it back to Wizards of the Coast, and I think the first person he showed it to was Aaron Forsyth, who immediately got infected with it, and then spread through Wizards of the Coast as it was spreading through the judge community, and then of course the rest is kind of history.
Yeah. Well, there's something interesting about Commander is that I don't know, but most of us started playing in early 1970, 1980, and then the Magic took a way to the competitive standard play, modern play, and most of us started leaving the game Magic. And when Commander appeared, I did come back to play Magic through Commander. A new sense, a new sense of reincantation with Magic appeared, because Commander was appealing for the old player that when you don't have the money, you have only one card, and mm-hmm. started to grow. And when that started, most of the people that play a competitive standard or modern view Commander as a I want to use the correct words, but it's like the sick brother of formats in Wizard. So and nobody will take in relevance about the format. But right now, Commander is the format that is leading in Wizard in always in playing, in selling cards and stuff like that. So I think that for most of us, Commander appeared in the exact moment to come back to Magic and restart this love for the play.
Yeah, well, I certainly have heard many stories over the years of players saying, you know, I used to play, didn't like what I, you know, the competitive formats or whatever, or the tournament formats, and you know, slowly drifted away. But then I heard about this Commander where you're intentionally not playing formats, and it's like, oh, you know, it showed me why I love Magic in the first place.
Yeah, right? There's a comment by Diego Butter.
Yeah. Rotation is a thing, and having to change your deck every 3 months or whatever is really a burden for some of the players. So it makes sense that you have an eternal format that you start building your deck and crafting it and honing it over time, and you don't have to worry about those cards rotating out. And that's the beauty of the eternal format. The problem of the eternal format is also that cards never rotate out.
Yeah.
Right? So that you have to, you know, a lot of new cards aren't designed with the old cards in mind. And we get broken interactions with old cards because, well, it happens.
We have another comment. Well, I don't know if you can see the comments that are appearing right now, but you can see a lot of bang. Bang Tassos Oracle, Bang Dockside, and Bang Hood Breacher. There's a lot of discussion about that. But we will talk about that a little bit further in our talk.
Yes.
Well,
because before starting talking about the RC plans for this year, let's tell the audition how to win the Mana Crypt.
Oh, okay. Sí, yeah, sorry. this part I will talk in Spanish, Sheldon, so sorry. Yeah. Damas y caballeros, el día de hoy tenemos el sorteo de un Mana Crypt para todo LATAM. Para todo LATAM. Ya no vamos a hacer cargo de enviárselo, se puede demorar un poco de mente, pero para todo LATAM. La forma de ganarse el Mana Crypt es básicamente una pregunta que tienen que responder en un formulario de Google que les vamos a mandar por el link interno acá de los comentarios. La pregunta que nosotros le hicimos a Sheldon es ¿cuál carta de criatura no legendaria es su favorita? ¿Ya? Esa es la pregunta. ¿Cuál carta de criatura no legendaria es su favorita? Tienen que adivinar, pero sin embargo, sabemos que es una pregunta muy amplia, muy difícil. Tienen que, vamos a dar algunas pistas durante el transcurso de nuestra conversación. Y como va a ser un formulario de Google, la primera persona que responda correctamente se va a ganar el Mana Crypt. ¿Ya? Las únicas personas que sabemos cuál es la carta es Matías, yo y obviamente Sheldon. Entonces, lo que vamos a hacer es eso. Voy a, en estos momentos, les voy a comentar en el chat. Tienen el link al formulario de Google que vamos a ir posteando constantemente. Y en ese formulario tienen que llenar cuál es la carta de criatura no legendaria que es favorita para Sheldon. Y durante el transcurso de toda nuestra transmisión, vamos a dar algunas pistas para que te puedan ayudar cuál es. Ok, Sheldon. I already did the whole introduction to the people for winning this Mana Crypt.
So, Sheldon.
Yep.
Which are the plans for the ERC for this year?
Well, there are a lot of them. In fact, it's a pretty ambitious schedule that I laid out for us because I don't think it's enough for us to just sit where we are. Right? We didn't set out to conquer the world, but here we are. So I think we have a responsibility to do more with where we are and what we have. you know, we have a platform, so let's use it. And I think that providing sort of value added service to the Commander community is something that we can do, right? The RC doesn't have to, we don't have to go sell the format to anyone anymore, right? We don't have to convince people to play. There are definitely lots of people playing Commander right now. So I think what we need to do, we need to sort of turn our focus and maintain the health of the format like we have been. I think it's, a lot of people think that, well, all you do is ban cards and unban cards. And I don't really, that's not really the primary tool that I think we have in Commander. Commander is a social format. So the solutions to its problems or the things that you make better are social things. You can't use a mechanical solution to solve a social problem. So the ban list is an element, but it's not the primary element, and it's not the only element. I think we talk to people about what we can do for them, how we can help make their Commander experiences better. And one of the big things I think that we have to do is help players develop the language and tools that they need to navigate untrusted games, to navigate games where they're playing with people that they don't know, whether it's a LGS or a Command Fest or, you know, or whatever big event that you've gathered. Like, for the most part, local groups, you know, you get together with your six or seven or eight friends or whatever and play. You don't need so much help from us because you have an internal language, right? You're invested in each other. You're invested in each other's fun. You have, you know, you care about the people that you play with regularly. And we don't need to give you as much help as the people who sit down with you know, friends they haven't met yet and have an experience. So I think one of the things that is good for us to do is think about how people talk about their Commander games, how people get into their games when they're gonna start in untrusted environments. Of course, I think I don't want to bury the lead here. I think the big thing from that article is the fact that we're gonna expand the Rules Committee.
Nice.
Right. The major thing that I think a lot of people are taking away is, okay, it's time for RC expansion. I want to do some things with the website and make it more useful. I want to do some things with our Discord server and make them more useful. And our Discord server, if you haven't visited us, please do, because we have a channel in there for global players. So for, you know, Magic isn't just, as we know, as you guys know, Magic isn't just people in North America, right? Mm-hmm. There are people all over the world. Yeah. So there's a channel on our Discord server for talking about global issues and about things in local environments that might be different, and how we might be able to help you in your local environment. But really, the big thing here is that it's time to expand the RC. The last member of the RC joined us, Scott, joined us in 2008.
No.
So we expanded to six, because there were other people on the committee at the time. We expanded to six in 2012 with Devin Rule, but then his work at a game company got in the way of him, you know, sort of contributing. So he and Alex Kenny, the other other Canadian, had to step away. So it's been the four of us for a long time. Yeah. And we're very, very close. But, you know, when you... It's time for us to shop for our legacy, right? It's time for us to think about tomorrow. And it's time to think about things like representation. And again, we have a very narrow sort of demographic on the RC. You know, yeah. We're all, I think Gavin is the youngest of us at about 45. So we've got, you know, 40, 50, 60 year old people. And we all happen to be privileged, cishet, straight white dudes. So it's, you know, we started working on the diversity issues with the CAG, right? It was very important to me when we formed the CAG that players across Magic could see themselves in high level commander positions, you know, people all over the world. I think we're going to continue that with our advisory group, but really it's time to add a more diverse voice to the Rules Committee, and we've committed to doing that in 2022. Nice. And when we made that announcement, we didn't have somebody in mind already, right? It wasn't we're going to appoint this person. It was we're going to do this, and now we're in the process of talking to people and figuring out who that person or persons will be.
Nice. Matias, do you will...
Yeah, I would love to see some Latin America representation in the RC. That will be very nice.
Yeah. Well, I certainly we're very North America centric on the CAG as well, and we're very West Coast. And like 8 of the 12 are on the West Coast. And I'm like, okay. I mean, you know, we do have Greg in Japan, but he's not Japanese. He's an American serviceman. We have Charlotte in Finland. We have Kristen in the UK. But it's time to go south, and it's time to go farther east.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have to do that. Like I really, really want to do that. Because the Latin American community loves Commander so much.
Yeah.
Right? I want to bring your passion to our advisory group.
Yeah. We do love Commander. Well, and that's another thing that you wrote in your article in Star City Games, is that for support content creators. And mm-hmm. for us to having you here is one of the ways that you are doing to support our content creators, especially here in Latin America.
Yeah. It's the second time that Sheldon is here.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. we're very glad, and we're very, how you say, honored about that. Well, another question that really will be interesting for you to answer is that how would you describe the relationship between the RC and Wizards of the Coast right now?
The best that it's ever been. We had some really high level talks in 2021 with them, with the folks in Studio X, and the thing is we formalized a better process of us providing input to them on the design teams, and really to Gavin Verhey and Glenn Jones as sort of the high level commander thinkers. We're plugged into them in a more formal way, so we get to see the sets during the design process. We usually see them sometime early and sometime late to, you know, because card sets change. But we see them and we talk to them and say, yes, do this. No, don't do that. Stop making generically good commanders, right? Focus them a little more.
Please stop making five colors commanders that you don't need to pay the five color mana.
Yeah.
What Matthias said. That was a big point. That was a very big point. It's like a five color commander needs to cost Wooburg to cast. Yes. Right? And that is I can tell you, Matthias, that's a message that they have heard.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. That's right. Very nice to sit there.
I have a few friends that are widowed from the Golos ban. Yeah.
Well, they, quite honestly, they said when we told them we were going to do it, they said, go ahead.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead. And same with Hellbreacher. They're like, do it. So, we have to make sure that we're not emotionally tied to the things we design, right? But the ground truth here is that the foundations of this better relationship started when I was there in 2019. You know, I spent the end of 2019 as a game designer at Wizards of the Coast, working on Strixhaven and a couple of other projects. And we talked a lot. Like, we just would sit in Studio X and talk. And we talk about philosophy and about approaching design and about how cards better serve the player base. And I think we've seen the fruit of those conversations starting in early 2021. I think Strixhaven, Forgotten Realms, and now the Innistrad things, I think we've really seen, because things take time to work through the system. We've seen them hitting the sweet spot for commander design.
Yeah. Nice. Well, recently we talked about the five color commanders that you don't need to use the five colors. And it started to appear a lot of comments about this one right here that started the fear about the ban of some creatures like Nagila, Cairnbrith.
No, I don't. I think that the issue with Golos was that it was just so generically good, right? It didn't matter. Nagila, you need to do a specific thing with. And to some extent, Cairnbrith, I mean, okay, you can generate infinite mana and do broken stuff, but you're generating infinite mana. It doesn't matter what you do with it, right? You can win in a million ways. I would, don't sweat Nagila. That's not going anywhere. It's not even a topic of conversation.
Okay, you can even sleep easy, Luke. There's another question here on the commentaries. The one right here. By the way, do you think that CDH should have a separate ban list? Flash ban was kind of a polemic one, and Thoragon seems to go in the same road.
No. CDH shouldn't have a separate ban list because it doesn't do anything. Right? If we made a separate list and had the regular list and the CDH list, nothing would stop somebody from bringing a CDH deck to a regular game, right? So that it really doesn't have any effect. And separating CDH would be to say that it's equally popular as the rest of Commander. And although CDHers are passionate, CDHers are also in a minority, a pretty significant minority of the Commander player base. So I don't think that, I think that maybe in the future when we talk about modules of Commander, if we talk about Commander sub-formats, really, then certainly the high-powered one gets its attention. But for splitting right now, it really doesn't do anything. And my fear would be that if we did split, it would ghettoize CDH. It would sort of set them adrift with no bigger community support. And I think they're better and healthier along for the ride with the rest of us. That's the way I see it at the moment.
Yeah. For me, CDH and EDH are it's the same format. CDH is only like a power level scale to rate your deck. Mm-hmm. It's like the higher tier in your deck scale of power.
Yeah. I see there's a question about Divine and Commander into sub-formats, like Modern and Legacy. And I think I think that there's some good ideas to be had here. A couple months ago, I wrote an article about modular CDH and about how we might do that. And I think the community is big enough to maybe get enough buy-in on the different kind of sub-formats that we might have. This is not a plan. This is not a plan that the RC currently has. So it's something that's in the let us think about this. You know, what are we gonna? Can we do this? When you do something, you want to do it, especially from the 10,000 foot view. You want to make sure you do it right. And I wouldn't want to do something like that and do it halfway. I'd want to really put enough thought into it. Oh, hey, my friend El Jefe is in chat. Good to see you.
El Jefe, yeah.
If I ever had a chance to travel to a South American country to play Commander, which would be your first choice? Huh. I mean,
That's a tricky question.
Yeah, it's a very tricky question.
Yeah.
I could say that I would want to go to Venezuela because my friend El Jefe would go with me. Argentina probably has the first draw. Like it's so easy to say Brazil, right? It's a giant country. It's got giant cities. It's got giant. I have some very good friends from the judge program way back in the day from Argentina. So I probably, and I know they like a good steak. So.
Yeah, but we in Chile also have a very good steak and meat. So
yeah.
And it's better than Argentina, and our wines are better.
Our wines. Okay.
Yes. Your wine, actually, that might swing the that might swing the thing right there. Chilean wines are indeed better than the rest of South America.
Yeah.
So, before we continue, let's give a clue of the Sheldon's favorite card.
Para la gente que nos está viendo, vamos a dar una pista de la carta favorita de Sheldon. Recuerden que es una criatura no legendaria. Acabo de ver los comentarios.
Perdón. No es su carta favorita, es su carta, su criatura legendaria no favorita. Favorita.
Criatura legendaria favorita. Ya tenemos 81 respuestas y debo decir que de las 81 respuestas que estoy revisando, nadie le ha atentado. ¿Qué es la primera pista que damos, Matías?
Fuerza resistencia.
Pero no, mejor hablemos de su rareza primero.
Ya, su rareza.
Ya. La carta es.
La carta, no, mejor. No es ni mítica ni rara.
Ya, perfecto. La carta no es ni mítica ni rara.
O sea, puede ser común o infrecuente.
Perfecto. Ya. Ok, Sheldon, we are just giving a clue for. To win in the Monocrypt. We said that the card is not mythical and not rare. So,
yep.
What's that mean? Little clues for that.
That's a good clue. I mean, it might be. When it's time for the next clue, maybe I'll suggest one.
Nice. So, one of the questions that has appeared here in the comment section is, there's a card that is right now being observed or like make discussion about his role in Commander?
Well, we don't have an official watch list, right? We don't have a published list of cards that we're looking at. You can probably be sure that if people are talking about cards, we're looking at them, right? If there's a lot of conversation about a card, like, I don't know, Turgrid, you know, that's on our radar. One of the reasons that we had the CAG is to funnel more input to us from communities, you know, when, and there was a reason that the first CAG appointees were all content creators. It was so that we could have the voice out and the voice back from a broader audience. You know, there used to be an idea that the RC were just these shadowy people in a distant tower somewhere, you know, handing down rulings and then leaving. And we wanted to be more connected to communities. So we really want to talk and hear what various communities are saying, filtered through the sort of expertise then of those content creators. So if, like I said, if there are cards that people are talking a lot about, then we're aware of it. And that's how we come to our radar. You know, we have a format philosophy channel in the RC Discord, and, you know, people talk about cards in there. Hey, you know, what about this and why? Or, you know, what's the anatomy of a banned card look like? And that's, you know, we listen to what the community is saying, and then filter that through our expertise and experience, and decide to talk about a card or not.
Right. We know that you have in your radar Turgrid. But you have another cards in your radar that you are like discussing, you know?
Well, I don't. It's the reason that we don't have a watch list, a published watch list, is because I'm aware that talking about cards can move the market on them.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
I really don't want to be in a situation where we're setting somebody up for failure in. We talked about a card, and then everybody's like, oh, it's getting banned, well, you're going to sell out, and then we don't ban it. You know, you create a different set of expectations.
Yeah,
and
of course.
A watch list, we used to have one, and a watch list brings more problems than it solves, I think was the short version of what we decided in the long run.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so... I don't want to know if Tassa's Oracle is in the radar or not, but we held a CDH tournament last weekend with 48 players. Mm-hmm. It was a very big CDH tournament.
Yeah.
Most of the games were resolved with Tassa's Oracle's combos.
Yeah.
I have a group of CDH experts that I talk to. Just sort of off to the side on a separate chat channel, people whose opinions I really trust. You know, Cobblepot is a giant mind in CDH and a sort of just big brain in general. And but, you know, I talk to those people and gauge the impact of certain cards. And really think about it, right? I don't think there's any comparison between Thassa's Oracle and Flash, right? Okay. Thassa's Oracle set your house on fire. I mean, Flash set your house on fire, right? And we needed to help you put the fire out. I don't think there's, from what I understand, of course, there's no comparison between Thassa's Oracle and Flash as far as impact to the format. You know, when And even if we're talking about the sort of sub-community of high-power play, it's not what a card does that gets advanced. It's what a card does to the format. Man. Right? If there was a zero-mana artifact that you could put in your deck and said, everybody has more fun in this game, then everybody playing that would be fine, right? I was just in a conversation today with somebody who said, 10 years ago, everybody had Solemn Simulacrum in their deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was ubiquitous, but did it hurt the format? No. It wasn't. Did people go, ooh, I need to play against, I need to metagame against somebody's Solemn Simulacrum. Right? to circle back around, from what I understand, Thassa's Oracle isn't the problem that Flash was. I'll continue to talk to those people about the card. The way that I've looked at it and broken down what Thassa's Oracle does, I would probably look first at Demonic Consultation and Ad Nauseam. I think Thassa's Oracle may just be the convenient payoff for those things.
Yeah.
Okay. I've gotten good input on that from those advisors. So I think that, if they tell me like, we can't, we just can't go on this way, then we'll talk about it.
Okay. So let's change the subject. We were talking about recently about bans. Let's talk about something else. You were involved
No. Let's continue with the RFC plans for this year.
Yeah.
And then we go to we are recollecting some questions of the chat, and then we go there.
Yeah.
I know that one of the RFC plans for these years is update the philosophy. Expand the facts and thoughts about the philosophy of Commander.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to have the basic philosophy document to be relatively brief, right? It's only a couple of paragraphs, but every word has deep impact, right? There are bolded sections to call them out to you. And I think one of the things that would be useful for us to do is to expand our thoughts on the philosophy document. So I don't want somebody reading the philosophy document to have to read 22 pages to get it, right? I want exactly what we have on the website right now. But I think I want that hot linked in places to other, to think pieces that RC or CAG or some of the other deep thinkers about the format have written, right? I think we can talk more about the philosophy and expand on what we as the RC consider about the philosophy in additional documentation.
Sheldon, for me, I don't know if you know, but I am a human rights lawyer. And like a lawyer, I know. But I really, really like to write about the turn zero or the philosophy of the. It's like one of my I don't know how to say, like favorite themes to mm-hmm. write and talk about in the podcast, because I think that is one of the angular pieces of the format.
Yep. Well, you write about it. You write it. I'll edit it. We'll put it up on the website.
Oh, that will be nice.
How easy is that?
Yeah, nice. There is a question here that is in the screen. Yeah, Sheldon, okay, thank you. You can read this.
Yeah. How can I, as an individual, motivate more people to use pre-game discussion to improve Commander games? I think I think empathy is the root, is really like you understand your own motivations for playing, and you know what you love about the format. You know why you really want to be there and the kind of things that you enjoy doing. I think motivating other people to talk more is plugging into what motivates them. Like, find where their enjoyment is. Find where their sort of sweet spot about the format is. And I think if you create that kind of linkage between yourself and another person, then you can get them to open up more about their thoughts and their desires. We never wanted anybody to try to use a pregame conversation as a stick to beat somebody with, right? Mm-hmm. It's not there to force someone else into doing what you want. It's there to create more harmony within a group of people, especially people who don't know each other.
Have you ever think to talk with Wizards of the Coast to introduce the philosophy in the precons?
Yes.
And the answer was no.
philosophy is a little complicated for onboarding a new player, especially. Think about what fits on that little card inside the precon. And you're not getting a great deal of text. And it's the 21st century. So I think in that little thing, you then point to the resource, you point to the RC website, and we have gotten them to change. I'm very happy to say that if you jump from the Wizards of the Coast website and follow their link to the Commander website, where you land is the philosophy document.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a very important step for me.
Let's make a little break and talk about the next clue. Sheldon, do you want to say the next clue?
I will say that I have favorite colors in Commander.
Okay.
And my favorite card is not in those colors.
Bueno, para los que escucharon, él tiene colores preferidos en Commander, pero las cartas que escogió no son de sus colores preferidos. And may we know that what are your favorite colors in Commander?
One of your favorite colors.
One of my favorite colors is in Carador.
Okay. Nice. So, chicos, uno de los colores preferidos de Sheldon se encuentra en Carador, y la carta que él escogió no está en esos colores que está uno en Carador. Ya estamos bien complicados. So far we have 186 answers to the question, so yeah, it's a lot of them. Well, it's a mana cave, so a lot of people want to earn it. So I want to talk about something very special. You earlier, when we were prior to the conversation, we talked about that you were you work with the design of some Commander products for Wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Chance that we can see another collaboration between you and Wizard this year, or maybe next year, or the year before that?
I'm certainly willing. All they have to do is pick up the phone. we had a great deal of success with that. I would be happy to do that. And you know, I spent 2 months out there on the Strixhaven design team. I flew back to Florida, so we're literally all the way across the country. Like, Seattle and Tampa couldn't be farther apart than any two cities in America. I flew back every other week to get cancer treatments. Whoa. So I would work all week, get on a red eye, come back, get treatment, go back to Seattle. I'm not willing to do that again. But we, I mean, but we've shown, you know, one of the things that, one of the positives, I guess, we can take out of the pandemic is we've shown in the 21st century what we can do remotely, what work we can do, what ways we can collaborate with each other and not necessarily be in the same room. So I think that possibility certainly exists, and I would be happy to design more Magic cards because it was the most challenging and fun job I've ever had.
And what was your favorite card that you designed?
I like Promise of Loyalty because it, except for the name and maybe a tweak to the mana cost, I don't think that it changed from my initial design. Like, the words that are on that card were basically the first words I ever wrote for the card. I think I called it Taking the Vow.
Yeah.
And I think maybe my version was white 3 instead of white 4, but that's about it. Keen Duelist is another one that went right from original design all the way through the process. I would love to take credit for Ink Shield, but I had designed something that was lower in mana cost and not quite as splashy. And the play design team, Corey Bowen's play design team, took that idea. And he said, we channeled you when we made Ink Shield, right? We channeled you, did this to yourself, and infused that spirit into it.
Nice.
I would love to design a card.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder than you think. I mean, like, anybody can design a card in a vacuum. Like, design a cool card. You can do it. Like, you know, most everybody in the chat could do it. Now, design a cool card that fits into this set.
Yeah.
That plays well with these other cards, that follows this design document, that follows this world building document, that takes into account the sets that are on either side of it, and takes into account, like for a commander set, takes into account the biodome that the decks are going to play in. It goes from very easy to very difficult very fast.
Okay, so I have a question, Sheldon. Which gives more stability to the format? Commander decks in any edition, or larger editions such as Commander Legend?
So what's the heart of the question here?
Alejandro, ayúdame. ¿Qué es lo que le da más frescura al formato?
What do you think is more appealing to the format? The product that is like a commander deck,
the pre-cons, or like Commander Legends.
Okay. I think that pre-cons are fine and fun, but commander players love to pick at singles, right? Commander players love to find individual cards. So I think I'm going to go with the big sets there like Commander Legends. Commander Legends was such a great set. It was in design a very, very long time, longer than most sets are. I ended up drafting one of the first versions of it when I was just visiting Seattle. I was just out there, and they invited me and said, hey, we heard you're here, why don't you come by? And I ended up drafting it. And then, of course, Commander Legends was in development while I was there. So I got to see it from two different directions a couple of years apart. And I think the big sets are where Commander players are really going to find their happiness. They're going to find the Ink Shields and they're gonna find those cards that they just cling on to and really, really enjoy.
Yeah. Commander Legend is a very nice set. In our back there in 2015, when we started this podcast, we say the idea of imagine a set that is only for Commander with boosters, and it was like 4 years after that. We got Commander Legends. It was like, whoa, it was a very good idea. And I got the opportunity to play some boxes with some of my friends to draft the the product. And it was very, very, very nice design, the Commander Legends.
Yeah, I think it drafts well. It drafts well. It provides singles well. Like, they did such a great job with that.
Well, sadly, due to the pandemic, we didn't have the chance to play it in a local game store. So that was a huge, huge disappointment for most of the people, because it was a very fun draft to play. It's the first draft for Commander. It was we lost the opportunity to play it.
Jamster suffered the same.
Yeah, Jamster also suffered.
Jamster was like an edition that it was lost to play in stores because they're COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's go with the third clue. Sheldon, you want to say the third one?
It has, wait, let me verify this before I say it. I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Watch your glasses. You have a reflection in your glasses. Yeah. You can give a clue that it's the card. Para la gente que no está viendo, en la pista anterior que dijo Sheldon es que es de los colores que él usualmente no le gustan. Y los colores que le gustan, dijo que uno de ellos se encuentra en Absan. No es que los colores de Absan son los que no le gustan. Ojo.
It has three creature types.
Ya. Siguiente pista. Tiene tres tipos de criaturas. Tres tipos de criaturas. So far we have 246 answers. Well,
246 wrong answers.
Yeah. I think that I saw one that's right. I don't want to spoil it, but no, there's a lot of. Later we can see the list of the cards, so you can see what the people thought about the card that you chose.
So, Sheldon.
Yep.
There is another idea or plans for the Airseal for this year?
Yeah. One of the additional things I think we want to do with the website is to provide deeper explanations for why each card is banned.
So what I want to do,
first we have to get all those written, which takes a lot of time, because I think people want a little more than was just in the ban list announcement, right? Again, brevity is important when you're doing big announcements. I don't want somebody to have to read five pages the Monday before the pre-release to get to the point. And a deeper explanation why each card is banned is a great idea. So we have to get those written. Then what I want to do is have them as a rollover on the website, so that, you don't just get, when you roll over the card name in the list, you don't just get an image. You get a text box that has the explanation of why the card is banned. Again, that's one of those things that just, it's not difficult to do, it's just time consuming. We all already have pretty busy lives. So to being able to do that. But I've got a friend sort of outside the structure of the RC and CAG to help me with doing that.
Nice. I have a question here, but I really think that the answer is, but I will show it to you.
Yeah, I think, Israel, that Commander is the future of paper magic. And Commander, at least as long as I have anything to do with it, is not going to be a tournament format. Commander, there are other tournament formats, and Commander is intentionally, you know, it's hard to define it, something as being not something else, but that's kind of what we do, right? It's intentional to be a break from the pressure of tournament magic. You know, the idea of Commander is that you're playing and you want to play a good game of Commander, that if you don't pay 100% attention, that's okay, right? Yeah. If you're distracted by socializing with your friends instead of paying attention to the board state, that's a win as far as I'm concerned with Commander.
And those are the huge moments of Commander.
Yes.
The last. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're definitely not going to make Commander a tournament format. Some people will hear that and say, well, you hate tournament magic.
You were a judge. You were a judge.
You are
a judge.
I was a judge. I am no longer.
You're not longer, okay.
I retired. It was more than 10 years ago that I retired from judging. Oof. I would say there aren't too many groups of four people that know more about tournament magic than the Commander RC.
Whoa.
Right? Toby still writes the rules. Toby still writes the tournament magic rules.
Okay.
Right? Oh, so, yeah. It's not that we don't love tournament magic, it's that we wanted something other than tournament magic. And that's what Commander became. Now, one of the things I've talked about in my upcoming article, which is the annual state of the format piece, is that the decay of other formats is a problem for Commander, right? Yeah. It puts a pressure on Commander because, you know, people want to play Magic because it's a great game, and if they don't have other places to go, they're gonna come over to where people are playing Magic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're gonna bring other format mindsets with them, and those other format mindsets aren't a bad thing in the abstract, but they put pressure. The win first mindset puts pressure on what we're trying to do with Commander, which is have a place that doesn't prioritize winning first.
Yeah.
So I believe that healthy tournament magic is good for Commander. Because it lets the people who are disposed to want to play tournament magic to have that outlet to go to that place. Then that gives them the freedom to explore Commander more, sort of in the way it was intended, as something different, as something that doesn't have those same kind of pressures. So I'm happy to. Yes, El Jefe, you're right. It is the presence of paper magic. I think that good tournament magic is good for Commander. So I'm going to support good tournament magic wherever I find it.
Go ahead. No, go. Finish the idea.
If you want to play a tournament format that's Commander-like, that will scratch your Commander itch, I suggest you try Conquest. Just look, you know, you can Google them. There are a good group of guys. There are some CDHers in there, and they're running it like a tournament format. And the ban list is kind of big, but I think it's the kind of thing. It's the kind of thing that you would get the tournament experience with something that is similar enough to Commander.
It's called Conquest.
Conquest, yes. Card Kingdom has like some articles about the format.
Okay.
There have been writing about it.
Yeah.
I think that Commander Legends 2 or the Futures Commander Legends, it's like draft format. Maybe you can do a little tournament with that product.
There are plenty of tournament Magic formats.
Yeah. Well, I have another question. One of the main issues of building a commander deck is the old cards, and there's a big issue with the reserve list. Mm-hmm. Do you have any opinion about the role of the reserve list on commander?
Okay, I want to make a point there. Mm-hmm. The first editions of Magic the Gathering, they don't arrive to South America, or they arrive so little. So if in North America it's a problem, the reserve list, mm-hmm. in other parts of the world is a bigger issue.
Okay. Yeah. that's good context. My opinion on the reserve list is that I don't have the expertise to comment on Wizards of the Coast business practices. Right? That's not the sort of corporate me saying nothing kind of line. It's like it's a really complex issue.
Yeah.
And would I rather that all those old cards are easily available to everybody? Of course I would. Right? Yes. But what the legal issues are and what the PR issues are, I really don't think that I have enough expertise in them to comment on. It's, you know, I'm happy to give my opinion on stuff that I know something about. Right. And I think there's way more to that, probably in a legal sense, that I don't know anything about. So it's just like, it's up to them to do what they think is best with the reserve list. But yes, I would love for those of you who never got boxes of Legends or whatever to be able to get some of those sweet cards. You know, I don't think it's particularly healthy for Magic for Angus McKenzie to be a $200 card or whatever. Right? I think that some democratization of card availability is super important.
Yeah. Now you talk earlier about the speculation about cars and how the value of the cars is growing up to time. For example, I think that the most rated card that is a very good sample is Wheel of Fortune. Wheel of Fortune was a card that cost like $10, $20, and right now it's costing like...
It was $20 to 2011 when I started to play Commander. And right now it's $1,000.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, really.
All
the cars in the reserve list are growing with the prices.
$1,200. $1,200. That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
it's a lot of money.
I need to go into the closet there and find some cars.
Yeah.
Maybe buy a second house.
Yeah. So let's give another clue, Sheldon.
Okay, what did we give? Not in my favorite color.
Colors, yeah. It's a creature. It's a non-legendary creature.
Non-legendary creature.
Three. It has three types of creature.
Three creature types. It's not an elemental. But you might think it is.
Tricky clue. No es un elemental, pero pensarías que es un elemental. Ya. Yeah.
Y yo creo que deberíamos repetir el tema de los colores porque la gente se confundió.
Sí. Lo que dijo Sheldon es que es de los colores que no son sus preferidos. Y uno de sus colores preferidos se encuentra en Karador. Uno de sus colores preferidos se encuentra en Karador. Eso fue lo que dijo. So far we have 407 answers. All the people want the monocrypt.
Yeah. So, Sheldon, we know that we're asking for your not favorite, your favorite not legendary creature. But mm-hmm. What is your favorite legendary creature? What is your favorite commander?
I mean, that will change over time or...
Yeah, but from the top of your head, from the top of your head, right now.
But off the top of my head, Karador.
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 Nice.
Like, I just love the things that Karador does. I love casting stuff out of my graveyard.
Yeah.
Except I'm not a big fan of flashback. But putting creatures back into play from my graveyard, oh man, that's so sweet.
I am a Reanimator fan also. My favorite commander is the Nemoplasm.
Okay. Yeah.
old school commanders.
Yep. Yeah. So the same idea. Yeah, OG commander.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite commander is Brosh. Yeah.
Okay,
bro. Brosh.
Okay, so let's make another question.
There was one question I would like to address.
Yeah, of course.
From Coco Cove.
This one?
What do you think about think about the points mechanic of Canadian Highlander to play without a ban list? I think that Canadian Highlander does what it does extremely well. And it's geared to being a tournament format. Right? And there's a necessity of buy-in from a player to play Canadian Highlander. You kind of can't play Canlander casually because you have to get in there and figure out the point system and, you know, how do you build your deck and whatnot. So a point system for Commander is way more work than it would be benefit for, because then people would have to do a lot of figuring out how to play their decks. Here, I mean, Canadian Highlander or any point system is kind of a sliding scale. And in Commander, it's a Boolean. It's is banned or not, right? So you don't have to work as hard. And we want it to be easy for new players to get into the format. And I think that a point system is a sort of a next step, is not an entry level kind of thing. And we want to keep Commander as entry level.
I have a question about the Commander Advisory Group.
Uh-huh.
It had worked as you thought it will work when you started.
It has, in fact. I think I keep calling it one of the best ideas I ever had. And the thing is, the people are the original six people, and now the full 12 people, they're all really smart people and really invested people. And I get some of their, not just their expertise and their brains, but I get some of their emotion and attitude about the format. So it's great having them around. It's great being able to talk to them. It's great giving them advice, getting advice from them. And the thing about the Commander Advisory Group is that there are 12 individuals and they're intended to be that way. You know, they're from across a diversity of thought arc as well, from you know, from the super biggest casual in the world, Shiva Mudd, to somebody like Rachel Agnes, who is a pretty spiky spike. And we get a great diversity of thought, and we want to keep it that way. We don't ask the CAG for a consensus opinion on anything. We ask them for 12 individual opinions on things. And I think that gives us the kind of feedback that we want. So to directly answer your question, Matthias, it's worked even better than I thought it would.
Nice. That's very nice to hear that, because when you announced this new group, it was like a very good news for the community.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
You mentioned Shivam. Mm-hmm. I really love Shivam's ideas. I listen to his podcast. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan of him.
You'll hear me in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, really.
We sat down and talked about all kinds of things.
Tell him that he can be here when he wants to be.
Yeah. Sure.
I'd be happy to tell him that.
I would really like to have Shivam here, because I really like his point of view of Commander and games and mm-hmm. life.
Yeah, he had a great idea recently. He had a great idea when we were talking about the RC expansion. And he said he thinks that the next person on the RC should be someone who came to Magic via Commander, who is a Commander native. You know, the rest of us were around in the ancient days of Magic, and he thought that having a Commander, you know, like a Commander native, someone who came in to playing the game after Commander was an unofficial format, would bring that kind of diversity of thought that we need, and I think that's a great idea.
Here's another question that is, like, I don't know if it's very fun, but it's in Spanish, I will translate it to you. Do you consider that more participants in a game of EDH is more fun or more tedious?
4 is the perfect number.
Yeah.
4 is the perfect number. 5 is crazy. I think 5 is the limit, right? 6, you get to the point where you lose tension in the game because it takes so long for your turn. And even if you're trying to socialize, it becomes a little too much. You know, people like to go, oh, I played in a 30-player game. I think if I have to vote in the question, I'm going to say tedious. Like after 5, it becomes really too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's another question.
Oh, absolutely. We, I talked to Melissa before the team was officially formed. They told us about what they were planning on doing, and they were planning on Melissa leading it. So we had some very, very nice chats before then. And it happens that that I had some long conversations with Chelsea Santamaria, who got hired to be on Melissa's team, like back in May or June of last year. She just reached out to me and said, hey, I'm a big fan of the format, I want to talk. So we talked, and we talked back and forth, and I'm like, man, Chelsea, you're pretty smart and tuned in, and it's obviously that you love Commander. Let's talk more. So we did. And we keep talking now, and then of course she's up and got hired by Wizards of the Coast to be on Melissa's team. I think that team is a great idea, and I'm very happy with the construction of the team, and I trust Melissa a great deal to lead them into a good future.
Well, she gave us one of the four awesome Brawl decks. With Corvo, it was an amazing design of those cards. Even though nobody plays Brawl anymore, it was a very, very, very fun.
But the decks were very good constructed.
Yeah.
And they got very nice cards like Arcane Signet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was a very nice product.
Okay, let's give another, the last, I think, the last clue, Sheldon.
We gotta hit closer to the mark, don't we?
Yeah. You have to think that we have already 486 answers for your question.
Okay. I think we can, at this point, tell them it's multicolor.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's good. And that it really doesn't do too much attacking.
Entonces, chicos, es una carta multicolor y no hace mucho atacando. Yeah. I have a question that I would like to answer, give it to you, Sheldon. What are your thoughts about the expanded universe that Wizard is going through right now? D&D, Lord of the Rings, Warhammer. What are your thoughts?
Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it.
Yeah?
Love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. My only thing about Lord of the Rings is that they didn't ask me to be on the design team. Right. Fortunately, Scott Larrabee is, like, you know, and he, you know, I would come at it from being a Lord of the Rings nerd who has read the books. You know, the first time I read the book, most of your listeners weren't even born yet, right? I've read the Silmarillion, so I'm that kind of, you know, I would have the nerd conversation about stuff with Stephen Colbert and Lord of the Rings. So I would come at it from that angle. Fortunately, Glenn Jones is also that sort of Tolkien geek level. So, you know, he's in there on the team.
But you're talking with two Tolkien geeks right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
huge.
Yeah. The books are the important part, right?
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But in answer to the question, I think expanding the Magic universe is a great idea. I get that some people think that Magic should just be sort of classic swords and sorcery world things. But, you know, we already branched out into things like Mirrodin and Kamigawa even. So expanded universe seems to me to expand the design space for the folks in Studio X, and I want to see the sets from all my favorite properties, right? I want to see a Lord of the Rings set. I want to see a Dune set. I want to see a Game of Thrones set. I want to see a Mistborn set, right? And I think there are so many good properties, so many good IPs from great writers that they can tap into for ideas. Like, I don't know much about Warhammer 40K except for the fact that there are giant armies and life is cheap, right? I know that gene stealers are very scary. And the reason I know that is because somebody gave me a set of gene stealers, painted a set of gene stealers, and gave them to me, and I kind of use them in my tabletop RPG as, like, generic demons. And, like, the first time I pulled the set of gene stealers out, a couple of players really panicked. And they're like, we're going up against the gene stealers? I'm out of here. I don't think that everything that they do has to be for everybody.
Yeah, of course.
Right. If they wanted to do a non-fantasy if they wanted to do Bridges of Madison County set, do it. Like let the designers explore that and find a place that they can be. But we have enough properties in our expanded nerd universe that that there are plenty of things that they could tap into.
Well, another question here is this one. What are your thoughts about the unsets?
Kind of mixed. The thing, you know, people ask, oh, why don't you just make silver bordered cards legal?
Yeah.
It's like, well, because then we'd have to ban a dozen of them anyway, or you know, or 20 of them, and then messaging gets difficult, and so forth and so on. I think there are some very, very clever ideas in unsets, and things that maybe designers could use to springboard off of. But in the whole, unsets often seem to me to be that joke that gets less funny every time you tell it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, but now they decide that the cards are having a distinction. Like,
yeah, they told us about that, and they told us about that in advance, and that seems fine. I mean, I would like the distinction to be like bigger.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think I have a complaint. And it lets them again make the kind of very silly cards and kind of thought-provoking cards that won't break the format, right? Like, I mean, Gavin Duggan has a Grand County Throng deck that he's played with on stream. It's, you know, it changes the nature of the game, and it's fun, and it's not the way I'd want to play it all the time, but... and Toby had a Baron Von Count deck that was hilarious, and I killed him with his own Baron Von Count with a Willbreaker or something. I think it has the kill somebody ability is targeted. I'm gonna double check that I'm not lying here. Baron Von Count.
When Unstable came out, I made 4 decks of Commander to play with some people.
Yeah.
So it was amazing.
No, I think it can be one of those things that are really fun in a limited amount, right? You know, it's a refined taste. You can't eat the same rich dish for dinner every night.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah, let's do the last. Well, we already do the last. Let's show what's the card that you choose, Sheldon.
We have a winner.
Oh, we have a winner.
Yeah, we have a winner. Yeah, I would like to say that right now we have 529 questions, and
answers.
Yeah, 529 questions and answers. Sorry, answers and. It's funny because one people discovered the card at, let me see, it was very early in the conversation. It was like at 11:53. But suddenly, when you said the clue that it seems to be an elemental, it appears like a lot of times. So let us show. Let me share my screen. Okay, guys, you want to see what the card choose that children choose? Remember, it was his favorite non-legendary creature card. It's a multicolor card. It has 3 type creature types. It doesn't much attacking. And it looks like an elemental, but it's not an elemental, and is in the colors that they're not the favorite from Sheldon, and one of the favorite colors from Sheldon is in Kalador. So the card and the people that is going to celebrate is the people who choose Colin Oracle.
Love that card. Love that card so much.
So it's a snake elf druid. Yeah, and I'm going to show you how many people. This is let's see some of the cards that some of the people said. Well, you can see that Gilded Drake, Sun Titan, Cultivar Colossus, Sura Angel, Endurance for the Artist, Prodigal Sorcerer, Breath of Paradise. But the first people is here. The guy who won the Mana Grip is Juan Carlos Lamas Alfaro.
Oh, oye, muchos saludos a Juan Carlos. Lo tuvimos en vivo.
Yes. Juan Carlos Lamas Alfaro is the winner of the Mana Grip.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Yeah. And the funny story, Juan Carlos made a second time the
voting the answer. Two times called yeah. Miracle.
And you can see, I highlighted all the people that you can see here, Geraldo Fedon.
Yeah, Gerardo knows me though. You know, he's known me since when we played the neighbor together back in the old days. So that was kind of cheating for him.
Yeah. I think that he said that in the comments in the comment part.
Yeah.
I cheated. Yeah. I'm not sure for the Avengers. Yeah. So then you have Maximiliano, Tony, Kyle, Elvis, Daniel, Luf. So guys, Juan Carlos, you win the Mana Grip. So give us a private message, and I will send it to you.
Okay. Before finishing, Sheldon, I know that you like heavy metal.
Yeah.
Yes. And I have a little question for you. What is your favorite Latin American heavy metal band?
Well, I have to say that most Latin American heavy metal, I love the music and hate the vocals. Like, I'm not a fan of dirty vocals, like, at all.
You're like a Bruce Dickinson singer, like Bruce Dickinson's.
Yes. Yeah. Bruce Dickinson, Jeff Tate of Queensryche, I think, is probably the best male vocalist in heavy metal. And the best vocalist in all of metal is Flor Jansson of Nightwish.
We read your Twitter.
Yeah. Some bands, like Unleashed the Archers, uses dirty vocals as sort of backup vocals. Yeah. And I think it has good effect, especially when they have songs. There's a couple of songs on their latest album where the dirty vocal is like the evil voice and the female singer's clean voice is the good voice, and so they're they have that contrast there. And I've heard a couple of other bands, like Amaranthe uses dirty vocals some, and to pretty good effect. There's a European band, I think they're Danish, called El Nuveity, and they have a female singer. Like, when she sings, I love their songs. When they do the dirty vocals, I'm like, I can pass. So like a band like Sepultura, I love the music, right? If they were an instrumental band, I would listen to them. But once the dirty vocals come on, I check out.
Have you heard a very old Argentinian band is called Rata Blanca?
No.
You have to listen Rata Blanca.
Okay, yeah. I have some bands from South America that are clean voices like heavy metal, like Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
You have to listen to Kraken from Colombia from the 80s. I'm going to write it to you, but I'm going to say it right now in the chat. Luzbel from Mexico, Bondipel from Chile, Rata Blanca from Argentina, Resistencia from Venezuela, Ultimatum from Mexico, Execution from Colombia, Hybrid Girls from Colombia, Amethyst from Costa Rica, Angra from Brazil, Luzbel from Mexico. That are bands that they seem clean.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are from the 80s. So it's like
very,
they have the influence of the new wave of British heavy metal.
So we have that sort of melodic, harmonized guitar kind of thing. Okay, Yeah, no, send me that list. I will be happy to.
I will send you. And most of them, they have girls singers that I know you like.
That's been my obsession the last 2 years.
Or male singers that sing like girls, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what heavy metal is about, no? Okay, Sheldon, right now we are an hour and almost 40 minutes time. We would like to thank you for your time. We know that you are a very busy person, but for us, again, it was an honor to have you here for a second time. And hopefully, we'll have you for a very long time in the years to come. Here you have your South American home, and if you visit to Chile, be sure that we can share to you some of our great wines. And the best barbecue that you have ever tasted will be here in Chile.
Okay. I'm up to that challenge.
Nice.
I think maybe sometime when the world lets it happen.
Yeah.
I would be happy to do the South American tour and hit some of the major stops, and because I know from both the Judge program and Commander, I've got friends everywhere, right? It happened in we were in Europe somewhere, and I tweeted hey, we're in Prague today, and somebody looked me up and said, hey.
Nice.
And then I ran into, I ran into Matteo Calgari outside of Italy somewhere. We were vacationing. I'm like, that looks like Matteo across the street. And damn it, it wasn't. So, yeah, the thing about Commander is that we're a kind of a big global family.
Yeah.
And I always thought that Commander, EDH would be this small global family. That there would be some of us, right? But clearly the message resonated and echoed all across the world. And that makes me very, 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 very happy there are people everywhere that appreciate what we do.
Yeah, it's a universal language right now.
Yeah.
For all Magic players.
That's true. Magic is a universal language. That's true.
Yeah. Okay, guys. So we are finishing this conversation, late night show. We'd like to thank you, all of the people that hear us. Sheldon, when we end this live, please stay a little bit so we can talk in the afterward. Así que chicos, muchas gracias a todos ustedes que participaron con nosotros. Fue una interesante jornada junto a Sheldon, junto a Matías. Sorteamos un Manakib. O sea, qué noche más espectacular, ¿no, Mati?
Espectacular. Tremendo invitado. Además que Alejandro cada vez está más mino, no sé si se han dado cuenta.
Oye, Matías siempre me anda jodiendo. Tengo que tener cuidado. Ya chicos, cuídense, que estén muy bien y nos vemos próximamente.